Found it.
Hello, welcome to the Oswald Game. I'm your host, Rob. Welcome to Stream Street. We forget. it's the 40k adjacent show, which means I'm joined by Peter. I might actually just ignore him. I'm joined by Pete, at least. Hey,
what?
Pete.
Coco!
What?
We're also joined
You don't even know me.
We're also joined by Val. And we're also joined by the winner of the Las Vegas Open. I'm not sure if that's the right way to describe it, but I'm saying it anyway. Tank Roberts in the house.
Hi, Rob.
Great to have you on the show. Thanks for being here. Hashtag shield walls in the chat, I think is what we need to do. Obviously, so the organizers, I can't believe how lucky I am. The organizers and the winner of the Open all on the same show. What a bumper.
This is going to blow you up.
I think it's fair to say it was the shield wall that won, not me.
I mean, you had some in like creation of the shield wall. That works. Yeah. That's how it kind of works. List writing services. When I think is the real question.
Yeah.
Yeah. £45.
You're like you're lowballing.
I mean, yeah. I think you better check the competitors out there. I think you might be able to do a little bit more than £5. Nick Nanavati started his business on the back of his
he said 45, Val.
Oh, he said 45.
45. Yeah.
45. Okay, yeah. That's much better. Yeah, no problem.
I was actually one of Nick's first ever clients.
Yeah?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I sort of got involved like just after he won the LVO with the Eldar that time.
Yeah, that's right, because that was when he was the Brown Magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a Brown Magic person.
That's amazing.
Has he run out of Brown Magic?
I think he's maybe changed. He's still obviously very good. I think he's maybe shifting his focus more towards growing the business. And he's got some like quite hot young blood under him there, hasn't he?
Ooh, hot young blood.
I mean, look at this show full of hot young blood, let's be honest.
Right?
Yeah.
Fresh face, big eyes.
I need to ask you all, like, what was the weekend like? Have you guys done a behind the scenes yet? Is this an exclusive behind the scenes? Or Pete, did it pull off the way you wanted it to? I think that's probably the first
mostly
question.
Pete mostly. Always pulls it off the way he wants to.
It's true. It gets a little weird.
Very
specific. Very specific.
Yeah. But yeah,
sorry,
I mean,
go ahead.
I think it started off with a bang for me. I was Thursday night. I was setting up. I was at work setting up a couple documents for everybody to go through for the weekend, and had my first plane crash at the airport while that was going on. So that was cool.
Yeah. By the way, can I just tell a little anecdote? I can't even remember what I asked Pete, but I was like, Pete, something innocuous and that could totally wait. Pete answers in detail. Oh, yeah, by the way, can't really talk right now. Dealing with a plane crash vanishes.
What?
What?
I mean, it was already over. It was already over.
Well, that's not the impression you left. The impression you left was you were pulling someone out of a burning plane while answering
that's
questions
not
about
I wish it
tickets.
Worked. I don't wish it worked that way at all. I'm glad it doesn't work that way. But yeah, that was my Thursday.
He was referenced in the local paper in very complimentary ways, although he was referred to as, quote, the tower, but
yeah, it's fine.
Did a great job coordinating, ensuring a safe landing for the pilot.
My voice was about 2 octaves higher than it normally is. Definitely sounded like it did when I was about 13 as I went through everything, but overall, what? Super good.
I'm glad you're glad the plane crash. I was expecting the plane crash.
Everyone was okay, people. I wouldn't talk about it if it was. I probably wouldn't even be here if everyone wasn't okay. No, everything, like, it was a smoother landing than I have seen planes take that did have landing gear. So let me
get this right. You organized an international 40K tournament with content creators around the world and saved a plane from crashing.
I didn't save anybody. I just called people. I just called people and was like, something bad's going to happen. Basically, and then that was it. Like, it was.
Did he look like this guy?
I did. I did.
For podcast listeners, Val has decided to discover. He's discovered technology for the first time. And like the boomer he is, he's using Snapchat filters as if it was 2014.
This was actually the plan for Serval Skull. I actually commissioned a proper Snapchat filter for coming to our I don't have any landing gear. Pete, you out there, buddy? Can you help me? I commissioned one of these from a very nice young man in India, and unfortunately, it's what they call an overpromise, underdeliver, and he did not get me a servo skull. He stole some things off the internet that looked like servo skulls that were nightmares, where my face was halfway in the servo skull. It was really bad and scary.
I
like it.
I wish you used those.
I'm sorry?
Did you use it?
No, God, no. No, I just didn't reply to any of his messages at a certain point. But he made it 75 bucks, so it's fine.
Ghosted him hard.
Ghosted hard.
I was like, not dealing with this one.
Kid, you can have...
Kid, you know who I am? I'm a podcast fuckboy.
That's right.
You are. So, Pete, so started off with a bang.
Yeah. And I just didn't sleep for the weekend. Ta-da! Everything worked. Mostly.
It did mostly work. But so
70% effective, which is 100% in my books.
That's pretty serious. Can you guys walk me through some of the stuff? And Tank, I'll come to you in a minute and ask like what being in it was like. But structurally, so organization by Pete. But I think am I right in thinking the show was being run by our tech man, Val?
Yeah,
it was. I would say like I offhandedly did two key things because I like to believe in myself as more of an executive leadership style. So I just throw things out there and hope other people take care of it for me. And then I just bask in the glow of their success. So I named it and I was like, let's do like an international tournament with a list move on, obviously. And then Pete somehow organized that. It was so complicated. As I was doing it, running the stream, which is like, how the hell are all these people actually showing up at the right time in the right place? How do they all have the right models? Like, that was crazy. You guys coordinated. Tank was involved. They all coordinated their lists in a way where they were like, okay, yeah, you can do that. Because, like, downstream, you had to make sure everyone had the models to be able to do it. It was an amazing feat. I was so, so impressed just by how everyone came together. And how positive it was. There were some people who were AWOL from time to time. Pete could throw the Australians under the bus if he wishes. Oh, shit. At the end of the day, everyone showed up for work. It was fantastic. And the Spanish went crazy. It was so nice.
That was one of the highlights. Yeah,
every time I tuned in, the Spanish Twitch was on like 900 viewers. I tuned in. Like, not to be rude to Paul or Adam, both of whom I think are fantastic, but I would tune in and just to hear like the most enthusiastic people, and I didn't understand what they were saying, but I was like, it seems so key.
Their stream was amazing. Like the commentary was crazy. Like I couldn't they destroyed us in every way, shape, and form. And I'm so proud that we had them on.
Yeah. When they asked, like, because they asked me, they were like, hey, could we maybe participate, do Spanish coverage? I'm like, guys, look. We're just stealing some feeds that other people are doing. Literally couldn't stop you if I wanted to. Go nuts. And then they proceeded to put together like all this collateral, like these really beautiful like Photoshop list things, which we used. Like really this was the Los whatever blah 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 open. Like this was definitely a Spanish production that we were riding the coattails of by the end of it, which was fantastic.
Tank, what was it like being part of the process?
Oh, it was awesome. It was such a pleasure. I mean, when I first found out about it, obviously, Peter messaged Mikey, and we've got like a little like WhatsApp group with the people who go on and help him with bits of filming. And he was like, oh, lads, Peter's asked us to take part in this. Is anyone interested in playing? Of course, like everyone wanted to be involved, but luckily I was the only one who could be free both days that weekend. Mm. So I managed to sneak in there by default. And I wasn't sure quite what to expect and what the scale of it was going to be, to be honest. I knew it had the potential to be really big. And I just thought it was a really cool thing because obviously it's for charity. And it just gives the community something to sort of hype around and buzz about. So I was like super excited for it. But as it sort of developed and the weekend went on, the hype around it and the interest, it, it, it was pretty crazy, really. It blew me away. I mean, Val's probably got a better idea on sort of viewer numbers and things than I have, but I would imagine it numbers of views-wise, it must have compared quite comparably to a lot of, like, big actual events. There's a lot of engagement, I think, wasn't there?
So just on our channel, like, well, actually, here, I won't talk yet. I'll go get the actual stats. You got someone else speak.
Like, I've been checking out the different channels and their views and how they were live. I know live a lot, basically everybody destroyed their normal numbers. Even Titans, which was probably our biggest live channel in terms of how they normally pull, they pulled about 1,000 more people than they've ever pulled on a channel for like a live viewing. And that was for both their games. And then I've been kind of following the post views afterwards, and most people are doing, looks like, pretty decent numbers. After even just 24 hours, a lot of them hit like what their normal viewers would have been for, you know, a week or two or more, like post. So feeling pretty good about that. That was something I talked about last night. We did the Chapter Tactics recording last night, and it was something I was really hoping for, like, probably more than anything, was I wanted the charity to do really well. And that blew away my expectations. And then I really wanted the people that were coming in, the content creators, to get a boost of some kind. I wanted people to see these people that I've watched that I think are awesome, and like kind of grow the community that way. So I was, hopefully that lasts for everybody, because I really, that was a big thing for me.
It was such an all-around win, wasn't it? Because like you said, there's a load of money for charity. The content creators have all managed to help each other to share their audiences around. There's been some good fun content for the community, something for people to get hype about while they've been bored stuck at home, and fun for everyone involved. It's just been really cool.
No, I really enjoyed it. I was really happy. I get super down this time of year, and so it's like it's quite the ride of like serotonin and dopamine for me as we go through. But the weekend was just great. It ended the way, like, there was a point probably halfway through where I was like, I'm just gonna die here soon, and I don't know what to do. And then at the end, I was like, oh wow, this actually worked. Jesus, how did this happen? Like that was.
So to give you just, so this is just the Ocho, so this is not, because we were using I have the keys to the castle, so we were streaming to the Frontline Gaming platforms too, which actually didn't do as well as the Ocho did somehow. I don't know how that was, but anyway, so just the Ocho, we had almost 10,000 unique viewers, we gained 2,600 followers, and we averaged 287. On the Spanish one, they shared their stats with me. They had less unique viewers, but their average viewership was like 500 or 600. Like, sustained for 36 hours.
And we recorded...
In the middle of the night!
Yeah, we recorded... For them, it was between, like, 10 p.m. and 8 a.m. was, like, how we were doing this. And they were, like, busy all the time.
Yeah,
Bizarre was messaging me. He was like, it's 4 in the morning here. We have 800 viewers. And I was like, you son of a bitch.
I stayed up to watch the final. I noticed... on Art of War's YouTube, I think they had like a steady 1,000 for the whole final. Yeah. And I guess Frontline would have more on top.
Yeah.
They had how many for the final?
It said that there were 1,000 watching the YouTube.
Amazing.
For Art of War. And I guess other people would be watching Frontline separately as well.
So eventually I did get the Nightbot working, which I roll Rob Symes. It did take me until... way too long to figure out how to get it going. But okay. I did get it going. And when that happened, I added a helpful exclamation point, you suck, which would reveal the links to the streamers that we were watching. Because people kept being like, oh, this is dumb. Let us listen to something else. So the number one Nightbot comment that we had was exclamation point, you suck. I think that's funny.
That works well. That works well. Like, and also, like, how did you guys, were there, like, what were the, because let's say I wanted to go back and watch every single one, like, I obviously would be mental, but, like, if I wanted to, but if I didn't and I wanted to cherry pick, were there, like, what were the games that really stood out, would you say? Obviously, you could chart, like, the Shield Wolves Path to Victory is a good start. Like, what else?
There's a bunch of really good games. I think the if I had to rate them, the number one game is the Titans semifinal, because like, it's just a really good game. And Drukhari with the like surprise win in a very competitive setting, especially with everybody talking down on them. That was the game that I can think solidified some things and made the event better, because we had some issues. We had some issues in the second round, which I knew we were going to have. I was hoping they'd be a little less apparent than they were in a couple of the games. So when third round happened and the Titans put on such a great show, the finals were great. In the first round, I think Play on Tabletop's game for the first round, despite them being a more casual channel, was actually excellent. If you watch the whole thing, they did a really good job. There's a bunch of really good games. There's a couple sleepers, as there always is going to be, a couple snoozers that I felt bad for. But generally, like, I would say every channel had at least one game that was really good to watch. And probably that Tabletop Titans semifinal. And the finals, Nick and John did such a great job explaining everything they were doing. They made it look great. And when you watch it from a competitive standpoint and you realize there's like two things that totally change that game around, like, it makes it even better, because the score doesn't show how close a game that was. So.
Okay. So there's some pivotal dice roll moments is what we're saying.
There's
decision
points. Yeah. Oh yeah. There's one pivotal decision point that I think, because of how it happens, Nick misses. Spoilers for the chat. There's a point where Nick blows away like four shield guard in a squad. And John's like, I'm pretty sure I'm leadership 9, so I'm just going to roll it. And then he rolls it and someone's like, you're leadership 8. And he's like, oh, then I wouldn't roll it. And he'd already rolled it and rolled like a 6. And Nick's like, oh, whatever, just take it. You can auto pass it. I'm okay with that. If that's what you really would do. Cause like, they're buddies, they know. And John's like, I 100% would try to auto pass this, because it's like a 10 point swing for you. Because it's my while we stand, we fight and some other things. And it knocks me off an objective. And so Nick's like, yeah, just take it. But if Nick had vected that, cause he had totally could have, that's a huge change in that game, because that Guardian then survives like 3 rounds of Ravager fire with a 3+ invulnerable save, and proceeds at the end of the game to do another 15 point swing for John when it heroically intervenes onto an objective and wipes it.
The only thing you have to think there, though, Pete, if you think
it changes
about
everything.
If you think about the sequence, though, if John had says, I'm going to auto pass this morale, and then Nick says, I'll vect it, John would have to roll, and he's only losing the guy on a 6. And I don't think Nick would have spent 4 CP on the vect, knowing that he'd have to roll a 6 for it to get any return.
Oh, yeah, no, it's.
I think that's why they said. Because Nick said, I would never have done that. I wouldn't have spent vect, knowing that it would only work if you roll a 6 after it.
Yeah.
So.
Still, like, things like that. Really, you have to think about when it comes to how the game changes. The fact that like that Guardian would then like cause such an issue for Nick for the rest of the game. There's such a good. It's really,
well.
Yeah. It's a that really.
That was actually the only thing I think John misplayed in that game, because I was screaming at the iPad, because he could have used the Custodes Transhuman then.
Yeah.
And he would have only had to take 4 saves instead of 8, and I bet you he only would have lost 1, and it would have that would have been quite big as well. But
what's it like,
generally,
what's it like being watching your list be played in the final? That's got to be like such a unique experience, right? Is watching your own list be like you said, you were screaming at the pad, right?
Well, it was crazy. I mean, he was playing against Nick, who's obviously one of the best players in the world, and John is himself. John was the perfect pilot for that list, because he plays both. I watched their streams and them play, and he's like a really janky technical player who plays a lot of Custodes and Sisters. And it was really surreal. I can sort of tell you a bit more about it after, but he was sort of messaging me before the game, asking me about secondaries to take and how to play it. And he had his own ideas as well. And I have to say, generally, John's just like a straight better player than I am and ever will be. And he sort of reacted to a lot of Nick's janky moves and sort of saw them come in, like ones that I would have missed. And he shut down Nick in ways that I wouldn't have realised, and Nick would have caught me out. The only criticism I had was that missing that transhuman on that shooting phase. But other than that, I think I wouldn't like to say that I could have won that game, but he pulled it through because he's such a good player.
Interesting. It must be so interesting watching someone else play your list at that top level, especially watching those guys. But don't put yourself down, Tank. Me and the chat think you could have won it. Absolutely.
Hey.
Shoot wall forever. 100%.
John messaged me and we're having a chat and talking about secondaries, and it was quite interesting because when I was sort of like practicing the list and putting it together, I had some help with some good friends and stuff. As Val knows, I'm like good mates with Alex Harrison, and he gave me some good pointers, and my sort of regular sparring partner at home, Dan Brook, he helped me out a lot. And we sort of came up with this counterintuitive idea of taking While We Stand on those three units that you use quite aggressively up front. And I was saying to John, I said, hey, I know it's weird taking While We Stand, we fight on them. But I said, just push out with the custodies, pretend you've not got While We Stand, and they'll just do the thing. They'll do the thing and they'll see you through. And he sort of said, we were talking in the interview after, weren't we, Val? And he was saying, left to my own devices, I'd probably be a bit cagey with those and have them stood behind the wall. But he sort of said, like, oh, you said push out with them and use them, and it worked, luckily, so.
Well, I mean, it works with them.
He was giving you an adept at it. He gave you a lot of credit for mad Gresh. A lot of aggression with those units.
I liked
those units.
It worked really well against Mikey in his Blood Angels. And then I think it psychologically, like, destroyed him for the Necron game. Like, I think that was a big deal.
Wow.
Mikey said it. He was like, I'm not going to charge those shield guardians turn one because it didn't work for me the last game. But he was playing Necrons, which is a completely different army, and can afford to bounce off of them because that wasn't the point, right? And I think that was a big, like, that was probably the big mistake for Mikey. I mean, people are talking about how he, like, missed stratagems and whatever, but who cares? Like, that's not what changed the game. It was literally Mikey making that decision, like, I don't want to go into those shield guard because... Yeah. I lost my last game because of them. And so he waited a turn, and that gave you all the time you needed to kill the Silent King and do what you needed to do, right?
What's interesting about the conversation and some of those data points is actually like is how like things that are happening in game, or like Tank was just talking about Nick playing against John. They play each other all the time, right? So like all of Nick's janky movements, or like you were saying, or his plays, John's used to this. He plays all the time. They play together. So like they kind of they're at that skill level, but they're also at that experience level. Whereas like Mikey, like suffering like that psychological blow, like you're saying, and it's interesting how many times those small microcosms of experience that we're kind of witnessing on screen would be translated out to other games, you know, like I think one of the things that comes up a lot is when people play lists over and over and over again, they really start to trust those units, or you know, or even like big up a unit, like here's my scary unit, but it's not even that scary, right? Or like on average, it's not that big, and how much that really affects your playstyle and decisions you make on the tabletop, which is probably why the people who play the most generally tend to do the best. Is probably a good point for that.
100%. I think if we went with an identical format, it probably would have made more sense to maybe do a top 8 instead of a top 16, just because it would have increased the likelihood that all of the lists could be known by the players. And so the handoffs would have been better. There would have been more chance of there would be someone going 2-0 and like playing the same list twice in a row. I've got a question for Tank. Did you do any prep for the list that you could potentially have wound up piloting had you lost your first game?
No, I was... If I'd have lost my first game, I'm sort of comfortable with Blood Angels because Marines aren't that tough to play. And I had actually... I had actually had a TTS practice game against Mikey's list with my friend Dan using it beforehand, so I sort of knew how a few little sort of trades and interactions would work going into it, which was good. And me and Mikey, we kind of said we'd be like absolutely amazed if that Slaanesh list could beat Siegler's list. So we were like all ready to go. We borrowed the models from one of the Hellstorm subscribers had kindly lent us his Slaanesh army. Mm-hmm. So we're all good to go and we had the models, but I was just going to get up on Sunday morning and learn to Slaanesh and maybe speak to Mark Perry on the phone.
Just learn how to Slaanesh. No problem.
I mean, I think this. That's not Slaanesh unless you just run at them, don't you? So it'll be okay. what was an interesting backstory, actually. I finished the Blood Angel game with Mikey and Manny was lighting up my phone.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up sort of I know Manny from LVO, and anyone who doesn't know, he's one of the Glasshammer guys, and he's on the England ETC team, like famous for his jammy dice rolls and his horrible
chaviness.
Horrible list in the LVO last year, the artillery barrage.
Yeah,
and it. Anyone who's not met him, he's a lovely bloke and like one of the most enthusiastic, expressive people you'll ever meet. Super friendly, and he was like, Tank Bro, I love your list. I love your list. I want to use your list in the next round. he's saying, I think you can take this Necron match. He says, I think you can take it. The mission's perfect. And he actually spoke to me. He called me for half an hour on Sunday morning. And he was saying, like, oh, I think you should deploy like this and look at these secondaries. And he actually, it's interesting because I've heard Siegler say what he would have done. And Manny had actually prepped me. He said, like, he'll probably do this turn one, which he didn't.
Huh.
But I actually did have a plan for that, because what Siegler wanted him to do, he wanted to do a first turn veil where you teleport a big blob of warriors onto my top objective on the screen. And he sort of said, you'll shoot at the custody guard, probably kill a couple, and then try and charge and obsec that objective, which would obviously be real bad for me. But what perhaps he didn't consider is the custody.
Your name is Tank?
The custody guard are in cover, so they would have had a two up save against the Necron shooting. And then when he tries to, they couldn't have veiled onto the objective because it was within nine. And yeah, mm-hmm. You nailed it, Pete. I was going to tangle foot, and yeah. He probably fails that charge. So it would have put the pressure on a bit earlier, but
yeah, I think that was his big thing.
First two turns, but yeah, he essentially skipped a turn, didn't he?
Yeah, because another thing Siegler was mentioning, and it was something I saw right away, was like if Mikey forces basically his whole army other than that one squad onto your bottom objective that turn one, and just says like, I'm going to force multiple charges, so you have to pick who to tanglefoot. That's where you get into a bad decision, where it's like, do I take the possible 9-inch at the top, or do I tanglefoot these guys that are now like 6 inches from me at the bottom? And then the big thing for that, and where it was really important for Mikey, is it gets the Silent King into combat one turn earlier. Even if because he failed his turn two charge. Was it his turn one charge he failed?
It was turn two. To be fair, on turn two, I think he failed a 7-inch charge with a reroll.
Yeah, it was like a 7 or 6-inch charge with the Silent King.
I know that's not a sure thing, but it's a bit it is unlucky. And if he'd have made the charge, he would have been out of sight of the Retributors too. So
yeah, and that's where being that little more aggressive, that turn one where he shoves everything up in your face and says, you know, hey, like, I might not make it this turn, I'm going to make it next turn. That's where the Silent King lives. And if the Silent King lives another turn, I mean, well, that guy's just doing work. But it changes the game up enough where, like, that game was close by the end of it. I was shocked. I was messaging the guys. I was like, man, if Mikey has to do a lot, but he might actually draw this out. I mean, he had to kill, like, 3 or 4 guard and do a bunch of other shenanigans. Like, it was a Hail Mary. Mm-hmm. But he made it interesting at the end.
It shows the power of that list and his Blood Angels list. he was able to scrap out so many points with, you know, bits and bobs left, really.
I was very impressed with Mikey's play. Like, I know some people have been a little down, but I think it was great. Like, he made a couple early mistakes in both games, and it's but he made up for it. He knows how to play the game.
Yeah, he's a good player.
So, what the other than the actual matches, what was everything else like behind the scenes? How did things work out? Were there any improvements for next time? Plan on doing it again? What's the sitch?
Pete seems pretty keen. I mean, I know Pete. I know we all. I think there's a lot of good community feedback that's come from, like how to maybe tweak the format. And I think there's some pretty low, as Pete said last night, some low hanging fruit that we could do to really tune it up a little bit. Honestly, I think it performed beyond. I don't know. I think it met my high end expectations for what it would be. And from a technical perspective, definitely things that can always be improved, certainly on my side of things. One big disappointment I had, so I was joking with Rob that the style of coverage that I was going to be trying to produce was going to be everything he hated. So, because the reality is we were doing commentary of games played by people who have developed a style for presenting live 40K on YouTube and Twitch, which is very different than, say, a CAN battle report that you get from any Wargaming or Tabletop Tactics or those guys, the original wave. So Tabletop Titans kind of came up with a format that was, I think, a lot more engaging. It's really geared towards audience engagement, talking people through. And that has spawned a lot of those channels, Mikey's, Art of War, all those guys use a lot of the same shots, a lot of the same style to present their games to their audience. And honestly, it's clearly effective, right? They're building up, you know, people who follow them, but it's all about sort of talking through the game, interacting with the chat, and sort of that's the approach. So if you're commentating on top of that, you are fundamentally redundant. And so that kind of gave me chills coming into it. It's like, shit, like what are we actually adding here? So my goal was to kind of what we're adding is the Paul Murphy and Adam Camilleri, who are two really wonderful, enthusiastic guys about 40K. And if you like them, you're going to watch them, you know, regardless. And the second thing was I was hoping to be able to do a hybrid of their commentary with the table talk. And that was one of the many things I figured Rob would be upset about. Mm-hmm. But just on the technical back end, I was really proud of how all the pieces came together, except there was one last one, which was getting the audio from the stream we were watching back to the commentators in real time. So I had it set up so that everyone was essentially on the same channel watching the same thing at the same time, which is kind of hard to line up when you're using everyone web-based in different places in different parts of the world to do that with very little latency. It was a miracle. It was amazing. All the bits fit together, but I couldn't get the table sound back to the announcers at the same moment. So I could get it back to them, but it'd be lagged like 5 or 6 or 7 milliseconds, which is a lot. Full on seconds, not milliseconds. So essentially the goal was to be able to have it so the audio would duck. So like, say we'd be watching the table, you'd hear them talking and it'd be full volume. And then if our announcers started to talk, the audio on the table automatically ducks out of the way and you can hear our commentators. That tech worked. What didn't work is they couldn't hear what was on the table. So they were just constantly talking over the table talk and that didn't work. So eventually we had to cut the table and it was just our guys, and that was great in its own right. But would have loved to have just them sort of being an extra layer on what was going on the table. And then there were some channels where we wouldn't have needed the table talk because, you know, they weren't as geared up for that presentation style, but the big channels that were participating, the guys who are geared, you know, do this for day in, day out, you know, those ones I would have loved to be able to get that table sound from them and then just have our commentary adding to it.
Mm-hmm. It's a very unique, right? It's not, I wouldn't hate it because you're not actually doing tournament coverage. You're doing live stream battle report coverage, which is
it's a different
kind of fish, right?
It's more like a co-stream, really. And I think, you know, under the circumstances, I think, you know, the Ocho stream did about as well as we could. And then, of course, the Spanish guys absolutely destroyed. I should be going to watch them and being and taking some friggin' notes on what they were doing.
I have a lot of notes about like how they handled it versus how we handled it. There's a lot of stuff that we could do better to make the announcers better, and it's not because anything Adam and Paul did. It's just structure. It's all about structure when it comes to this kind of thing. But
two wild stallions, Pete. They're hard to wrangle. Multiple production meetings scheduled that were, intentionally missed. I don't know.
But like, there's a lot you can do to enhance what's going on the stream, on the streams. We talked about this last night. My big point was, yes, a lot of these guys, they're commentating their own game as they play it, and they do it for a living now. So it's not like it used to be. I wouldn't do it in a tournament where I do so much tables, because in a tournament, you're going to get a bunch of Joes that just don't give a shit, and they're going to talk right through like nonsense or swear and just be an idiot. Rob said, a different kettle of fish. Still, there's definite big improvements we can make to the commentary side. There's a few improvements I need to make to the pairing side. For me, because it was such short notice, there was a lot of stuff I knew would be a problem, and I was just like, we're just going to let it happen. Like some of the round two games, having people that were just like, I don't know the list. I tried to kind of talk to the guys going into round two to be like, are you comfortable playing Necrons? Are you comfortable playing Chaos? And they were all like, yeah, we can make it work. And I should have just been like, okay, well, we can't just make it work. We'll have to figure out something more. But I was way more into the logistics. Like, do you even have the models? I'm way more concerned with that. So
there was sort of that. There's sort of the interesting thing, though. If this became more of a thing, it's like, do you have to design the list, knowing that someone inexperienced with it might have to use it?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a big part. But I think next time, because I'm pretty sure we'll do it next time, we're gonna let the round two guys tag team with the list builders. Like, actively. I mean, you were talking about Manny talking you through stuff the night before. Part of the issue with this one, because of, like, once again, logistics, was, you know, you would get into round three and Manny and Dan have to talk to Australia and Eric Lathuris is in bed because it's 3 a.m. So we'll have to, like, it's just extra stuff to work on. But if we have more time to build the bracket, I'm not like doing it 2 weeks in advance. I can make that happen. So that it's just like, it'll play smoother. So we can have Siegler like through Skype talking to Mikey through the game. And while Mikey can make his own decision, Siegler can just be like, I don't think you should do that. thing. It'll improve the quality of the game experience. I saw a lot of people being like, we should just make both players play lists they don't know. And I hate that idea because I want the game to end. It would be cute once, and then you're going to get a game where it's just like nobody knows what they're doing, and it's like a 6-hour, it ends on turn three. And I don't want that either. But I think doing a tag team scenario, it probably much easier and much better, because a lot of the guys did watch their follow-up games. They were in the chats. JT was in every chat for those Drukhari games, no matter what time it was, because he was so excited to see it go. And I saw Siegler in watching some of the games. So that's something I'd be really into.
Yeah, there's potential for like a whole other layer of really interesting content, the players coaching the other players and giving them tips and all that kind of thing.
I think that would be fun. And if we could integrate it properly so that the viewers got to see, I think that would be great.
You could, there's a little business opportunity, super chat potential there, right? Like you could have, you could even have, you know, pay a buck to scream what you're screaming at the TV at the player, you know, you know, like there's just things like that because the players, they want to win, but, you know, they're kind of fumbling in the dark. It would be great to just find ways to get them more information on the fly. Because really, I think there was a bit of a push-pull in the sense that people were still like, oh, this is Tank's list. Or like, this is Tank that's playing. Whereas really, you're trying to get your list as far as you can, right? So it's what can you do to get your horse further down the road? And actually, that was one of the cool things that Tank mentioned yesterday, was that you actually were thinking like, if I can win the first two games, you know, these guys will have a chance. And that you knew that you would have a chance to win two, to play two in a row. Some of the lists didn't have that opportunity. So I think, having the ability to to have it be like a long distance doubles event, I think is a way that you can solve that, or at least improve some of those problems.
Yeah. That's a big thing, because I think if like TJ was on for that round two game with Play on Tabletop, he could easily have just been like, hey, you need to cast this power now, and the game changes completely, right? Stuff like that. With like for Mikey to have Siegler just to be able to be like, hey, don't put those guys there, go down this way. Stuff like that makes the game more interesting from a competitive side, because you're getting, you know, 80% of what the guy would have done, the actual developer. So that's big. There's some website changes I need to make, but some of it was stuff I just didn't think about, and some of it was I'm the only guy doing all of it on the back end, so I just didn't have time. There was a lot of people like, hey, I want all the VODs available live, and I just was like, here's a link to where we're doing it, and if you want to watch your favorite channel, go watch your favorite channel. Without really considering people, but just might not know where these channels are, right? We talked about this last night as well. It's weird to me how social media works, where you get recommended everything all the time, but for somehow for Warhammer we just don't. Like, I don't get recommended anything other than the stuff that I already watch. So, and I was talking to some folks the other day when Tabletop Tactics did their thing, like promoting us and being like, we wish we could have been there, but because of COVID, we couldn't. And how many people I knew that were like, I've never watched a Tabletop Tactics video. I've never, like, what do they do? And I'm like, they're one of the biggest channels in the whole world. How come there's no algorithm that's like shoving them in your face literally all the time? So that to me was just, it was just like a miss on my part to be like, oh yeah, I guess people wouldn't know where to find all these different channels.
In Table Tactics' defense, now they have a weekly free one. In their defense, too, every single Bat Rep Report maker on YouTube uses a keyword, Lawrence Baker, Table Tactics. Straight up, when you actually do the analytics on all of the channels, everyone uses him as a keyword. It's hilarious. Maybe not Rob, but everyone else.
I don't. Is that what you do? That's such a shitty thing to do. It doesn't have a name.
Yeah. And like the older channels will always have Mini Wargaming. So if you look at Lawrence's, his has Mini Wargaming as a keyword. I think everyone sets up their keywords when they first start and then never touches them again.
It's 100% true. Like when I was creating the website, it forced me to, and I was like, I don't know, Warhammer's a thing, I guess. And maybe I'll put in like QAnon. We'll get some good viewers that way.
I've got jam on mine. Mine just says jam all the time. I'm like, people will be just raving for the jam. That surprises me.
Rob's all about SEO, man. He is all about SEO.
All about the SEO.
Yeah. I've recently started to advertise the midday shows, which has been going really well. Everyone helping us get to partner. I appreciate you. But I keep putting up a picture, and I've really just kind of run out of pictures. So like yesterday was Alanis Morissette. Today was just a picture of my Canadian friend Bud, who's a Mennonite. I mean, that really isn't going to get like a lot of traction, I don't think.
Mennonites, man. Mennonites.
But Owen Jackson is probably the new keyword to go with. He's the celebrity on the show now. Well, it sounds great. I'm glad there's a future. Val, like being in the booth the whole time. I know being in control of everything and getting to voice your opinion without anyone saying anything to you is your dream. But was it tough or super okay?
Was that for me?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I just appeared as a floating head every now and again to distract people and annoy Paul and Adam. They were the actual guys talking. I honestly have learned more post-show about what actually happened than I had... than I did during the show. And some of that's to do with my own clear inability to be a grown-up and focus on the task at hand. But some of that is also to the fact that, you know, don't look behind the curtain. I'm a great and powerful wizard. And there's just a lot of valves that are exploding, a lot of steam being blasted in my face, a lot of dials turning red, a lot of things that were being tweaked constantly, scenes being built on the fly. This is actually a lot of fun for me, but I didn't actually watch what was happening. I was just hoping it was all working out. And it did.
And it did. Well, that's great. I'm glad for you guys. That's super fun. And then, Tank, like, now you're, like, the winner of the LVO. So that's great, I think, that you get to claim that.
Yeah, technically, it's exactly the same, isn't it? Yeah.
It's exactly the
yes,
same.
It is.
No, I like... It it's cool that everyone's got sort of carried away and like got to enjoy the competitive play, but in my mind, it's like thoroughly kind of like an exhibition of competitive play.
Yeah.
And you've got to remember what it is, but it's been a really nice, fun thing. And yeah, I've had so much fun with it, and I hope everyone else has.
I mean, I'm going to shout Shield Wall at people all the time. I think that's the future. Ultimately, I think that's.
I mean, all we could dream of is that a couple quality memes come out of this. And Tank, I think you got it. You got us our hashtag Shield Wall. It's fantastic.
It was really cool how I loved how it was generally a bit of an underdog list, and a bit of a meme came out of it. Like, everyone loves a good meme, don't they?
That's right.
Well, that's think, the. Oh, go on, Pete. After you.
I was just saying, in the predictions, 8 people thought your list was going to win of the 350 that posted. 8 people. Wow. And 1 person thought JT was going to win. Most of the predictions that said that it was going to be your list that we win were like, I don't know how to do this. I'm just randomly picking. But I was impressed.
To give a bit of a credit, Manny Chima on Glasshammer, he did a list breakdown preview before it started, and he said that he thought my list was going to win on his YouTube. So shows that Manny knows his stuff.
That's a good vote of confidence, I got to say.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of things. I shouldn't say a lot. There were several things that you did in your list that I know relatively competitive players that I talked to were like, I don't know why I did this. This doesn't seem very good. And when I saw your explanations for them, like as you were playing their games, like I was convinced. I was like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense. Why wouldn't you just do that? Right. Like why did you take 2 instead of, 4 retributors in your units? And why didn't you do X? It all just fit, especially once you just said it out loud. So I was very into it, and I'm a big Custodes fan. So as soon as any Custodes in the list, you could have 1 and I'd be like, that list is going to win. It has to.
I ended up putting the Custodes in because my sort of regular local sparring partner, he runs some. And I've had such frustration against them, you won't believe. And it's unbelievable the things that bounce off the Custodes guard if you use the stratagems on them.
Well, I mean, just having a 1+ armor and a 3+ invulnerable save usually is enough to give most people fits. And then you add on the stuff you can do to just make them live. Yeah.
So a couple of questions, because I'm just conscious of time always, just for you guys more than anyone. Is we talked about the predictions and taking it away. Do we think how different to regular tournaments do we think that that win would be? Like, do you think that we're seeing something that maybe wouldn't be something that you generally see anyway, or just the format? Does that make sense?
I think in the right hands, that list could 100% win a GT.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say of the lists that were at the event, most of them could win a GT. There's maybe, Mikey's list, he said a lot of it was just he wanted pretty models on the table. It was still a good list. For me, you swap out 2 or 3 models in that list and it's stellar. But it was more because he wanted to make sure things looked good. He didn't want to take a bunch of unpainted Sanguinary Guard or Sanguinary Guard that he painted in 10 minutes. So even his list, which I felt was kind of maybe the least maximized for potential, was still a good list. I saw some people being I'm not sure if the people are bringing their best stuff, but I mean, Richard Siegler's list is 100% a list he'd run competitively. TJ's list was absolutely disgusting. If he had played it the whole way through, I don't know what beats him. Maybe Sisters, maybe Tank's list or Steven's list, just because Retributor Multimeltas can do work. But there's there were a lot of really good lists, and JT's list, which I think everybody thought was kind of the quote unquote garbage list because it's Drukhari, just absolutely showed that it could win an event in the right hands because it just did so much stuff. It wasn't that it had any one particular strength other than it could be everywhere and had a lot of stuff that you didn't know what to target because what's the threat now? And then the Mandrakes, do 5 mortal wounds in a shooting phase or something. And you're like, oh, I guess it should have been them. It was great for me from the, a list building perspective and seeing what people would have actually brought. So.
Interesting. So off the back of that, my question is, because obviously I'm a man with diamond hands. I wanted to ask you what you guys' stonks were. yeah, I wonder what the stonks were. What your guys' stonks are? If you guys, I don't know if you guys have done a stonk show yet. Did we do that last week? And what you would sell and what you would buy in 40K at the moment, based on information from the weekend, maybe not based on information from the weekend, just generally. I mean, Pete, you gotta be pretty excited about your Dark Angels, baby.
They're not broken.
They're good. They're really good. All rules are good. Nothing's broken anymore. I'm a narrative gamer now. I want everyone to know that. And everything I see is brilliant all the time. Because people love positivity. So, you got anything?
Yeah, if you were like, man, I'm not sure if I should buy some Dark Angels Terminators, just get on that. Just buy you don't have to buy a lot. Buy a decent amount. Buy an amount that you're comfortable with. If that's 40, probably not going to win an event, but you will wreck some of your friends. They will not be happy with you. if you buy like 10, like they're not going to move. There's so much good stuff in that book. I'm so sad by how good that book is.
You love that book.
It's so good.
Don't you love Dark Angels? No, you hate Dark Angels. You're telling Scrivo to fuck off, aren't you? I get it.
Literally all the time. That's not because of Dark Angels. It's because I commissioned him to do me some work, and then he just never did it. He was like, I got you, fam. Sent me a scribble that was like a stick figure on his chair. And then he was like, there you go, Falcon. This is the preempt. Are you good? I'm like, man, as long as it looks good when it's over, I'm great. He has never talked to me again.
That is actually the artwork that Scrivo could personally do. Everything else he just farms out to the same guy I have in India. Like that's it's really just a pyramid scheme.
So you're buying Terminators. What are you selling?
Oh Jesus, I don't even know anymore.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm selling Dark Angels Terminators because they are peak now, and by the time we're actually able to play in tournaments, it's over.
That's it. You get the market. You understand. You haven't got paper hands. I get you. Straight to the moon with those Terminators. Tank, you got any stonks? Anything you'd sell? Anything you'd buy?
I've been avidly following your stonk market.
Thank you.
I would actually, controversially, I would sell on Shield Custody Guard.
Oh.
Because I think when they get a Codex, I think they'll make them four up invulnerable Storm Shields. Yeah. And I think they'll lose a couple of the tastier strats, defensive strats from the Psychic Awakening, and maybe get a boost in offense instead. I said American offense, so I don't know why. I think overall Custodes might be at their sort of peak of their powers that they'll be for a while, and I think I have a feeling their Codex might just make them a bit worse for some reason. So I'm saying sell on the shield wall. The other thing is, someone told me this morning, Dark Angels have got a new warlord trait or relic or something, which means that people can't take better than a 5-up invulnerable save against them.
Yeah.
So that's a shield wall destroyer right there.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good artifact, Pete.
I mean, they have a stratagem that lets you like raise banners without telling your opponent you raise banners. Think about that. Wow. What a crazy thing.
They just have a stratagem
that's like, we can do actions without telling your opponent. What is that? How does that play out in a tournament? Like, how do you just be like,
No potential arguments there at all.
Yeah, that's not going to cause an issue.
What do you do? Do you just turn down your CP counter and look at the guy and wink? Is that the situation?
Tank, I gotta say that I feel like Custodes, just based on how they've been really beefing up sort of the tough elite units, I feel like Custodes have a chance to really get cray.
Yeah,
in fact, I would say they are probably a buy, just purely speculative, because of what they've done with Dark Angels and others of that ilk.
You can buy mine if you want them, Val.
Ooh, baby.
Look at this. This is why the stock market is so much fun. I can see why it's such a fun job to do.
Quickly, my sell, I'd probably go for Tau Crisis suits because pretty much as low as Tower are ever going to get. And they're also an iconic unit that have been bad even when Tower was good for a few years. Yep. So.
See, people have been burned in the stonk market buying on crisis suits for a couple years in a row now. So
it's going to be their time. It's going to be their time.
It's hard to say.
I'll get a middle of the road codex, but I think crisis suits will be a standout this time.
Rob, what in your stock market? What do you think speculatively? What is the buy for orcs?
None. I think orcs is a pure sell. I think
all sell.
I think don't all sell. To the point where the past couple of days, it's been like, is a photo going up online with the whole sell? Met guns are getting a change. There's no way they're okay with 18 met guns ever being a thing. Like money wise, right. They're loving it, but I don't think that they want that to continue. I really don't. The new orc range, I expect a whole new orc range. So I think everything gets updated, and whether or not you keep your boys or their boys are changed or whatever. Like I think whatever they'll do a Primaris on the orcs basically, and I don't think anything that's currently out there is going to be applicable. So. I big sell the whole orc range, to be honest.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's my stomp.
This guy has insider information, people. Insider.
I am insider trading. You know, I'd also probably sell your 6x4 Age of Sigmar mats. Just saying.
You know what's inside? The Martha Stewart.
You know what has an insider angle right now are my testicles, which have just sucked into the core of my body because I have 1 billion orc things, and I don't like what you're saying.
I think it's because you're old, Val. I mean, we talked about this. Once you get a certain age, you just start sitting on them. You have to get a water lord in the toilet.
I'm the opposite, man. I do Kegels. It's fine. But they're up there.
I don't want to battle
very
Jones,
high testicles.
Who
very
just says he started orcs. I don't want to make you feel bad about it. I think that's why the stonk market for Warhammer is quite interesting, because it's not billions of pounds, but it's significant money, right?
Bigger than the UK fish market. Bigger.
I could see them going to two wound boys.
Different boys.
Could you though?
Yeah. You know, kind of like they did with Fire Slayers a couple of years ago, where they all went from 1 to 2. Yeah.
Bigger boys. But they'll be bigger.
Maybe the same 2 wound boys, but you need like 60 instead of 120.
We haven't seen a really overhauled Horde army yet, have we? So we like, who knows if they've really shifted that design philosophy on them?
But they've always been Marine equivalent, right? There's always been that conversation: same strength, toughness as Marines.
They were lower strength for a long time.
Yeah.
Oh. Which was dumb.
Sixth and seventh, they were strength 3.
Yeah.
Wow. They're big strapping lads, so aren't they? They should be 2 wounds.
Yeah.
They are strapping lads.
Could be.
I mean, they're supposed to be footballers, right? Like, that's like, they're just supposed to be soccer hooligans.
Yeah,
so
look at the arms on them.
Yeah.
But the soccer hooligans really got defeated when, like, you know, they put up, like, signs to stop them going places and other stuff. It doesn't take a lot to divert them. To be honest,
that's how you stop an orc horde.
Yeah,
signs.
And also,
don't.
Also, they set
you're not
Greg's
allowed
up
here.
Everywhere. Yeah, they set Greg's up everywhere. So the football lads are pretty heavy now. They're not quite as strong as they once were, which I think is a thing. What strength is tank? That's a great question. Strength 8 at least, I think. Is the,
Look at this guy.
I was going to say, I like to think strength 5. But...
All right, well, I'm just conscious of time. We'll head out.
Just one last anecdote. I hope Tank has heard me tell. This is one of my favorite Warhammer stories. Bozier Harrison was in the finals, and you were rolling around with Alex Harrison. And I feel like there was at least two or three other, because Harrison's pretty. He's a pretty built dude himself.
Yeah, he's and a well just, put together bloke, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, and I just love that you guys. We were in Vegas. You guys were literally half of the title fight, and you looked like Don King was your promoter. It was fucking fantastic. So
it was a fun LVO, that one. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Well, that's not it. As much as the one you won. I mean, that's come right. on.
Tank, you couldn't hear me earlier when your audio wasn't working. There's a trophy in the mail for you, bud. Mikey's getting it. It's all for you. Amazing. It's coming.
That's good. That's great.
It is much better than the one John Lennon's getting. So
yeah, John Lennon is getting a pretty shit trophy. It may not even have his name on it. It may be somebody else's.
Oh, actually, no, I do have a follow-up question, because this is the most important point, as Pete has just said. How much money did you guys raise for charity? Which is awesome.
It's better in Canadian dollars. Go for it, Pete.
Yeah, so I did up the charity site in Canadian dollars. Everyone sees it in whatever they like, whatever their local currency is, which makes it look weird when people screenshot it. But it we raised $10,200 so far for charity in Canadian.
That's amazing.
So about $9,000 American, which is great. I'd set an initial goal of like $5,000. I was like, if we make $5,000, because there wasn't an incentive, right? Sometimes people do incentives like, hey, if you donate every X amount of dollars, you win something. And that generally gets a lot more push because people are like, I can win something. Well, I'm going to gamble on this or whatever. But there were some legal issues with doing that way we were handling things. And so we were just like, let's do it. Let's just say, if you want to donate, you can donate. And people went crazy. I was so impressed with the amount people donated. So
there were tons of individual donations, but yeah, there were some actual big, like single donations that changed the day. I also want to shout out here, podcast fuckboy nemesis, Tom Layton, who has in the past talked some shit about Warhammer charity events. And I would like to hear him publicly compliment and talk about how Pete did it the right way. We had a direct fundraiser page. We never touched any of the money except for the merch stuff, but that's okay. Papa needs some new shoes. So so I just want Tom Layton to recognize that this went straight to the charity. We had a fundraiser page. We didn't handle any of it, and that his criticisms I've heard of other charity events do not apply to this, and I would love the kudos that we are due.
Yeah,
that's all
and that's a great point. And also, shout out to Tom for being belligerent about what I think is an absolutely fair thing. You guys obviously did a charity run, and you did a charity run, and it was very like a public, and you could see what the situation was. Tom has been critical in the past of people having their personal PayPal receive money for charity donations, which I think is absolutely a fair criticism and well made by him. So thanks, Valve and Pete, for doing maybe, it up front. But you guys are allowed some new shoes. That's fine.
maybe Tom could take part in the next one as
I'll
game your entrant.
Oh, I'm into that.
Hell yeah.
I'm into that. I will say, I will definitely not be getting new shoes because I was not told until last night that I could get all of the prize support at cost. So I may have overspent on the prize support from my own pocket, and a little sad about that.
The thing that I'm the most sad about is that, so Pete very generously went rogue and was like, I'm balling out. I'm getting some sick gifts. We're going to give away cool stuff like the Silent King, Triumph of St. Catherine. And actually, Pete, when you told me that, I was like, Val, don't say anything. He could have got that all at cost. Don't say anything. So I just let that one roll. Meanwhile, Pablo gets on the line like, oh, man, you spent like twice as much money as you had to. Well, that's dumb.
Thanks, Pablo. I love you too.
Pops.
I love you too.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. That's the problem, Pete, in doing everything yourself and never allowing anyone else to help you.
Hey, don't be like that. The problem was, literally, I was a little too aggressive in the pre-setup in that I wanted everybody to know everything I was doing. So I was like, you can tell Val, he's getting blown up. I was like, I'm going to be doing this. Is this okay? Does anyone have any issue with it? I'm going to do this. And I just kept like spamming chat with like all these different things. And I'd wait. And after 24 hours, I'd be like, well, I guess no one cares. I'm going to do it. And then I just did a lot of stuff to the point where the guys were just like, we're just going to let him do it. Like, we're not going to just answer anymore. We're just going to have to ghost this dude. So, like, I went into the 40kstats.com budget, which hasn't been used this year due to no travel, and just spent it all. Bought as many prizes as I could that were big and thematic, and I'm happy for it. I'm glad some people got stuff that they didn't have before.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, FLG donated, Parabellum Games donated stuff, like, no questions asked.
Army Painter
went ham for us, too, like... We did great. I'm very happy that we made people happy.
And we didn't even have Army Painter objectives, although we did have logoed objectives that we mailed across the world at great expense and at great consternation to Rob.
They look disgusting. Yeah. I mean, like, you hilarious. You're like used painted models. I'm like, sweet. Yeah. Like on fucking mouse mat adverts. It looks ridiculous. Yeah. Just use fucking grey models and just have like a play on a TV with like running ads underneath. You know, whatever you want. Dickpills.com, the whole process. Like, just make it awful.
They won't reply to my emails anymore. I've actually turned the tables on them. Yeah, Rob, like, it's actually wild here, man. Like, the popularity of logoed objective markers, huge. Huge.
I mean,
You're disconnected from reality, Rob, and that's okay.
That's what a lot of people say about North America. They're, like, completely full of culture and class. That's what I hear a lot, actually.
You guys are the ones who have logos all over your sports teams. Just saying.
I don't follow the sports teams.
I'm not a fan of like the logoed up sort of shirts and things for playing Warhammer. I know it's an esports thing, but I see it and I don't know. It just seems a bit weird to me. But
it is. But it's also.
I'd like to.
I think it's fun.
I'd like to. I'm going to reach out to Adam and I'm going to reach out to the casting team and ask if maybe dungarees could be the casting outfit of the future. I'd like to push for that, really. Shirts and ties make sense, but I feel like dungarees would be super cool. Please go.
I have one more. This is actually a really great thing that Nikos brought up, and maybe it's something you guys have talked about before. I'm not sure, Rob, if we've ever in our meta chats ever discussed it, but finding terrain and mat formats that are contrasty enough with what we would expect most models to be. So that the it's easier to read a table, because it's absolutely true that I think a lot of the mats that get used are very busy, and it's easy to lose track of what the models actually are on it. So I feel like if you're in a situation where you are setting up a stream table, or if you're setting up to just stream specifically, focusing on how can we make it so that, yes, there's texture and it looks good, but also it reads well, and that it doesn't add too much noise so you can't see the models. In your table design and your mat design, I think is actually one of those like really quiet things that makes Stream 40K hard to follow. It's actually legitimately just not being able to tell what the hell's on the screen.
Yeah, big shout out to Owen Jackson. So we actually, for the Super Series, we actually we did the terrain first, and then we photoed the terrain, and then Owen did like he does a lot of design stuff. He did a thing where he like. Anyway, he designed the mats so that they integrate a little bit better. But your kind of rule of thumb really quickly is don't use snow ones, don't use like dark ones. Those are the two kind of like simple, easy, bright white and then like pitch black really is a problem for doing table coverage, which is just learned through experience at the end of the day. And like, you know, we'll all learn and get better as a community. So great question, pulling that out. All right, let's head out.
Maybe just a green screen. Maybe just have everyone play on a green screen.
And then we can put an advert on it, and then it'll be perfect.
Maybe AR it. Maybe AR it. Just AR the models. Have little things above their heads. I like it.
Yeah.
Bam,
maybe,
done.
Sort of like tabletop that you could simulate.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure.
There is an intersection of reality and not as much reality that... that we could probably find. I'm going to go with this. This is apparently the mind blown filter.
Okay, good. Tank, Pete, Val, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, my pleasure. Hopefully I wasn't too distracting.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure to come on.
Thanks for putting up with us, Tank. Thanks for putting up with us.
Yeah,
especially Rob.
Putting up with Tank. Yeah, no,
we were pretty on topic, I got to say.
I know, yeah, but not enough.
It was less adjacent than normal. Yeah, far
also,
less adjacent.
A couple of things. It's not long until we're on the 40K Jason Show's year anniversary. It's coming up.
True.
It's gunning down on us. Oh. So I thought keep your eyes out for that. But thank you to everyone in the chat. Obviously, congratulations to Tank. Hashtag Shield Wall Forever.
Shield Wall Forever.
Although he then immediately kind of betrayed everyone and just was like, "I'll sell it now if you want to buy it." and congratulations to Val, Pete, and all of the Nopen team for organizing a great event and raising so much money for charity. That's super sweet. I hope you guys have a great day. Thanks for tuning in. See you guys tomorrow.
Cheers, everyone.
Bye.